Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hi, this is Craig. Just want to let you know you can now advertise here on Everyone Loves Guitar podcast. For more information, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody, cool. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and I'm with one of Ireland's best guitar players, Jake Curran. He's only 24 years old, but like some of the most successful guitar players in Ireland all talk of him as being one of the top cats in Ireland. From a young age, he began playing in musical theater pits, and he's worked with a variety of artists since then. He's performed live in the studio and on TV with Niall Horan from One Direction. In fact, he just finished a pretty extensive US tour with Niall. Michael Bublé, Embers, Paul Brady, and Lisa Lamb, among others. He's toured throughout the States, Asia, Europe, and South America, playing clubs, stadiums, and everything in between. He's also performed live on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, The Ellen Show, The Late Late Show with James Corden, the American Music Awards, and the Country Music Awards, and he's currently working on original material for his own solo project, and he's a hell of a nice guy. Jake, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, man. Cheers. Talk about your tour. You just finished the U.S. tour with Niall, and you've toured the States before. And I was curious, like, what parts of the States do you like most? And was there anything shocking or surprising about, you know, American culture versus, you know, Ireland, either musically or anything at all?
What was actually funny was the obsession that Americans have with Irish people.
Really?
And how they love to kind of, did we lose connection there?
No, I can totally hear. Totally cool.
Sorry. The funny thing is how once you tell someone that you're Irish, they automatically become like a seventh generation Irish person.
Oh, my great, great, great.
My great, 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 great. You know, it's like I'm 1/8 Irish or whatever.
On one side.
Like, I found that surprising, because like everyone knows that it's kind of a common thing that like a lot of Americans are like that.
That's funny.
But I just always found it funny, and I kind of felt like I was trying to like find the American person who really kind of tried to be the most Irish. And like,
did you find him or her?
Yeah, I found him. Yeah,
Where was in a bar.
It was in LA.
Shocking.
It was just. Yeah, of course. Was ordering a pint, and dude beside me heard my accent. And he goes, "No way, you're Irish. I'm fifth generation Irish." And he goes, "My grandfather's from County Cork." And I was like, "Oh, cool, that's great." And then he goes, "Look at this," and he rolls up his sleeve.
Oh my god!
And he has a tattoo of a potato on his arm, and he's like, "My grandfather was a spud farmer, or a potato farmer in County Cork." It's like, so I got a tattoo of a potato on my arm.
Yeah, that's like, doesn't everybody?
Oh my god! Great.
Oh,
I was like,
my
you win.
God. Yeah, you win.
You win. Game over.
Holy shit! That's really funny. I wasn't aware of that.
It's funny. Like, I don't know what it is, but it just seems like maybe there just are loads of Irish in America. But it's something that like to latch onto.
Yeah, there's a big Irish population in America. Huge.
Yeah.
More so like we talked about earlier in the cities, but there's definitely a big population here.
Yeah, probably more so on the East Coast.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
That's funny, man. That's very funny. What was your favorite place? What part do you like the most?
There's definitely a few. It's probably Nashville.
Yeah.
Nashville. New York was amazing. We got to go there a lot. We had a couple of times where we had pretty much a week off there.
Wow.
Like you might have like two things on during the week.
That's
like
great.
A couple of promo things, and then you'd just be free to kind of roam around. So that was great. And then towards the end of that tour just there, we ended up having a couple of days off in Nashville.
That's great.
Just randomly, you know. So, yeah, I think I kind of prefer Nashville because it's quite chilled out.
Mm. Dude, anything's chilled out to New York.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, but the right side of chilled out. It's not like a ghost town.
No, not at all. No, it's cool.
Like we were talking about, yeah. People were friendly, you know, just had southern charm.
Nashville is probably the friendliest place I've been in the country. Yeah. Genuinely, you know, like you go in a store and they say, hey, come back and see us or whatever. They're being genuine. It's not, they're very sweet people there. And all the musicians there are wonderful as well.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny how maybe it's sort of the same with LA and actors, but like everyone you meet in Nashville is a songwriter or they're a musician or they're, you know, all your Uber drivers are either musicians or budding musicians. And yeah, and it's great. And it was a great place to go watch gigs and yeah, just have a good time.
Did you see any good gigs when you were there?
Place. I saw J.D. Simo.
Oh, yeah, I interviewed J.D. You know, great blues player.
Yeah.
Fantastic blues player.
Playing with his trio.
His 335. He's got an old 335.
Yeah, he had that red 335, and he had this, like, I don't know, super reverb and some other Gibson or Epiphone amp. And it was just loud. Yeah. So, yeah, but it was cool. Yeah, it was definitely a kind of vibey thing.
Yeah. He's a great player.
Who else? I kind of went into, you know, a couple of the bars on Broadway, and, you know, some of them were kind of crappy.
Yeah.
And then you'd come across like the odd Western swing band that were just burning.
Yeah. You'll find
that. Great city.
It's funny you mentioned you stayed across the street from Rockwood Hall. If you ever go there again, there's a guy I interviewed named Jim Campolongo.
I seen him play there.
You saw Jim play?
I saw him play at Rockwood, yeah.
That guy, amazing. Fucking amazing, man. I mean, he's everybody that... He's like the guitar player's guitar hero, man. Everybody I talk to loves Jim. He's such a good player, very tasty, very inventive and creative guy.
Yeah, I feel like any time I watch a different video of him, he's sort of like the same, sort of that Americana kind of thing going on. But the gig I saw him doing, he was full on going psychedelic and he was getting really heavy with a lot of stuff. And it was nice to see.
Yeah.
Someone who's been around for a while but still pushing the boat out, you know.
He really, it's funny you say that because I listen to his music and to me it's like stoner rock more so than
maybe
you know,
maybe that's what I got then.
I hear the Americana, you know, he'll pull out the Western swing and the country stuff, but it's very psychedelic and stoner rockish to me, a lot of the stuff he does, especially his live stuff more so. So it's good that you got to see him, man. He's one of the top guys around.
He was great. Yeah,
he's incredibly disciplined. He gets up at like 4:30 every day and starts work.
What do you be doing at 4:30 in the morning?
It's funny because I get an email from one day it's 4:30 in the morning, and I said, "Hey, you know." Then we talked. I said, "You don't seem like the kind of guy that's just getting in at night." He goes, "No, I get up at that time every day. I clear out my emails and I can practice for 3 hours."
Wow.
Yeah. And he's got a lot of stuff going on. He does like online lessons and stuff, and he's got a program. Yeah. So he's got his hands in a lot of things. But I'm really glad you saw him. He's one of the good guys, top guys you can see.
Yeah. He was great, and he was with his trio, and he had I can't remember the bass player's name. I think it might have been like Chris Morrissey or Chris Ramsey or something, something like that.
Chris something, yeah.
Yeah, and Josh Dion was on drums.
Correct.
You know, who does the synth.
Yeah,
he plays a synth and drums and sings at the same time. But I didn't realize it was him, and he was just playing drums and it was great. And then he was like, Campolongo was like, and now a drummer is going to sing a song, Josh Dion. And they sang this like old country waltz, and the dude just started singing, and we were like, holy shit! But one of the best voices I've ever heard.
Yeah,
while just holding it down. And,
they've had that residency like 15 years there.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Who else did you get to see in New York? Anybody else?
Saw Mike Stern.
Really? Like
the first time I was there, saw Mike Stern. Or the second time I was there, yeah. And that was awesome.
Where did he play? Was it Lower East Side?
55 Bar.
Oh, the 55 Bar. Great, right.
In Greenwich. Yeah, because I used to love Mike Stern when I was younger. For like maybe like 2 or 3 years, kind of really got into him. And then sort of just moved away from him. So saw he was playing and went to see it. And it was like one of the best guitar gigs I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because he was just so melodic and still has that crazy chorusy tone, you know, going on, and the kind of the almost like metal-y kind of distortion
sure.
lead to them, but it was, yeah, brilliant.
That's one of the top like jazz clubs in the city. You know, they don't have anybody come at the 55 bar. That's just for like top players there usually.
Yeah. Well,
cool, man.
Absolutely.
Did you see anybody in LA? Did you get to see anybody in LA?
No, I've been trying to catch Mike Landau every time I'm out there, and I like miss him by a week.
Yeah.
I've never even been to like the Baked Potato or any of those places. So I've seen a couple of bands. Like I went to a thing called Super Soul Mondays, which is just this outrageous soul band made of loads of session guys. That was cool. I need to see Mike Landau. That's
next.
That's my goal. Like just because he's my favorite player.
Cool.
You know, so I need to catch him. But it's amazing you go to these places because every night there's someone playing.
Yeah.
That's, it's just a top man, you know.
Very cool, man. When did you start playing? Like at what age? And like, I know you're very modest, but like a lot of people have told me that, you know, you're a super talented guy. What would you say contributed to your skill set?
I don't know. Like I had a pretty, pretty clued in teacher, at the start, but my dad's a guitar player.
Right.
So
is he like professional?
Kind of semi-professional. Always been gigging, but has always done a day job as well. Sure. But that kind of comes from like the rock, sort of the, like the 80s rock kind of background.
Sure.
Like a lot of Tin Lizzy from the 70s, but then sort of into the 80s metal kind of hair metal bands and that kind of stuff. Like,
sure.
But I don't know what contributed towards kind of learning. Like I had a teacher who was pretty adept at playing all kind of major styles. He could read, he could improvise. And he sort of just showed me cool players that I probably wouldn't have come across otherwise, like, you know, just people like Pat Metheny and Mike Sterney showed me that. So I don't know. I think like getting a grounding in like all those different styles of music from a young age was pretty, pretty helpful.
How old were you?
It was always interesting.
When you started studying and taking lessons?
10.
Were you practicing all the time? Like, was that your thing immediately?
Yeah, I think maybe from like maybe a year into it or a year or two into it was pretty, yeah, I don't really know what else it did. Like, you know, it was pretty, pretty hectic in terms of practice.
And your parents are probably super supportive because your dad played, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. And would kind of, you know, it would help out in ways that, you know, if he'd walk by my room and he'd hear me playing through the little practice amp and it sounded like a wasp in a jar. He used to say that sounds like a, you know, the tone is like a wasp in a jar. You need to turn down the treble or you need to turn down the tone on the amp and stuff like that. And you kind of like, you know, little things like that, that I feel always at the time is a bit like, you know, fuck you. This sounds good to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that I think stuff like that kind of helped a lot because kind of got me to critique my own playing based on sort of what someone had said, you know? I don't know.
Well, even get clued in about tone at such a young age is not common, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think it was probably that statement. It was just like the wasp in the jar, you know, that's like the worst sound ever. So I'm still scared to turn the treble past 5, you know? But yeah, no, I think that all that stuff helped. I think I was always quite critical. Don't know why, just from listening to loads of guitar players. I feel like a lot of young players might not actually go and listen to loads of guitar players. They listen to bands and they listen to like songs that they like, but I feel by listening to loads of guitar players, I knew exactly. And then being around my dad playing the whole time at home, knew what a guitar player was meant to sound like,
yeah,
or what a good guitar player was meant to sound like. So it was probably kind of hard myself that way, and that kind of seemed to help.
Have you ever played with your dad? I'm sure you have, like, gigs here and there.
I think we did like one gig together.
That's it.
And like, yeah, like one, like a cover gig of, I don't know, man, like 6-7 years ago. And then like, there's like a family thing with like, you know, get the acoustic guitars out.
Dude, go do some gigs at your dad. He would be fucking thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He'd be so happy. Because your dad's probably my age or younger. And trust me, he'd be thrilled.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Go do some gigs.
I need the gigs as well. So.
You also studied music in college, too, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Where'd you?
I went to a place just outside Dublin called Maynooth. And it was a university. About 10,000 people in it.
Okay.
A tiny music course with like 30 people in my year.
Wow.
And it was sort of like, it was a great time. Like, even though it was quite close to the house, I moved out there for a couple of years. All my best mates are from there, which is great. And that was the kind of best thing about college. It was just like my friends that I made.
Yeah.
I wasn't the best student, to be honest.
Even musically.
Yeah, it was, the course was, I kind of went out to that course, it was quite classically based, and I wanted to go out to kind of get my classical guitar playing a bit better, because, yeah, at that point I was really wanted to just be able to do everything extremely well. So I was like, right, do this, go out to Maynooth, do the classical thing for a couple of years, and then kind of got into that, and then sort of just lost interest in it after a year or two.
The classical stuff.
The classical guitar playing, yeah. And then the rest of the course was based on classical music, a lot of stuff, a lot of like 20th century kind of contemporary classical music. It's a lot of analysis, a lot of research, a lot of like music history and kind of old ancient music theory from like 16th century and Renaissance times and all this kind of stuff. So I just wasn't really that into it at the time.
Yeah, you got to be into that stuff to. I think you got to be into anything musically to absorb it sincerely, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's sort of a shame because I definitely skipped a lot of classes. And there was stuff that we had modules in that now I'd go and especially like contemporary 20th century classical music, I'd listen to something like that, something like Schoenberg or something, and be like, wow, that's really cool. I like that. I had a guy in college feed me that out of the palm of his hand, and I just like, ignored it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is frustrating, but, you know.
Yeah, but that being said, how many guys in that class have toured all over the world?
Well, I suppose it's a different thing, really, isn't it? You know, because there's people in that class who went on and did, who are probably doing PhDs in, I don't know, like, Renaissance music, which is what they love, you know.
That's
worked out really well for them that way.
Sure.
The weird thing I found about music college is that the majority of people that go into it, this was with my course, I'm not sure if it's the same across the board, but the majority of people that went into it came out doing less music than they had when they went in. And it was sort of, they were almost like scared off the whole thing.
That's weird. Why is that?
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
Like, what were they doing instead?
Well, they kind of went on to study a second subject and then maybe went down the teacher route.
So they get geared towards more academics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. But they would have gone down the school teacher kind of route or just finished college, got the degree, took a year off, and then like got a job in an office or, you know.
Yeah.
Just sort of knocks the music thing on its head.
That's too bad.
I don't know. Maybe it's just being scared of the... You kind of can be scared off by the academia like I was. And then the other option is just become a gigging musician, and that's like daunting as well.
Yeah.
For some, I think. Yeah. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if that's across the board with music colleges. Like, do the majority of people kind of fall into a different career?
Well, I've interviewed a lot of people that went to either Berklee or Musicians Institute, or Guitar Institute back before it was called Musicians Institute. Mm. But I don't know, you know, you're looking at the other, I'm looking at the people that came out there and stayed and came out of those places and stayed in music. I don't know the percentage of people, you know, you'd have to, although I think I'm going to have the, I don't know, the director of MI on the show. That'd be a good question to ask him. That's interesting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to talk about some artists that you've worked with, and maybe for each one of those, can you talk about how you got the gig and if you have a cool or fun or interesting story about working with them? Let's start with Michael Bublé.
I meant to say to you actually about those questions. So Paul Brady and Michael Bublé, I literally did like one tiny little gig with them each. So it's not like a big.
Yeah, but how'd you get that? How'd you get those gigs? And those are pretty top guys, man.
Yeah, the Michael Bublé one was kind of funny. It was for the national talk show, and RT is the station, so they have this thing called the Late Late Show, and it's nothing like the American TV shows, because it's a funny TV show, but I think they always got a musical act on it, and they get some big names in. So yeah, Bublé, he was coming over to do it, and they were just using a pickup band here, so I just got a call off someone I knew in there, you want to come in, and it was literally go in, rehearse for half an hour, and then record two songs.
Oh, that was it?
That was it. Yeah. it was the quickest thing ever. I think I spent more time worrying about which guitar to bring.
which guitar did you bring?
I've got this like old Musima guitar. It's from like the 50s. It's like a big jazz box thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got it off a guitar player in town. A great guitar player called Dick Farley in town. I'd have bought it off him for like €200 or something like that. But yeah, I just brought that in because it was kind of like a big band tune. And then there was another tune that was, it was like his new single. But yeah, that was it. It was literally the quickest thing ever, you know, in and out in an hour.
That's wild.
Shook his hand and then legged it.
That was it. Talk about Paul Brady, and if you could explain like some of the traditional Irish music that he plays to listeners who like may not be familiar with it, which is probably almost everybody.
Yeah. I'm not hugely familiar with Paul Brady's music, but so yeah, he's like a folk singer who accompanies himself on acoustic guitar. Absolutely incredible guitar playing. Like you said, it's kind of rooted in the traditional Irish thing. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's like he uses open tunings, the kind of, which is sort of like a feature of trad guitar, like a dadgad tuning to get that kind of modal thing. He does that, and combination of picking fingers, you know, moving bass lines, a bit of strumming. And then he does this thing that's kind of common to trad music, is like little triplet kind of ornaments that sort of lead onto other notes, and it's sort of a kind of a right hand kind of picking thing. And yeah, I don't really know how to describe his playing, but it's pretty something.
A little like hybrid of bluegrass sort of, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I don't know which one came first, traditional Irish music or bluegrass.
Probably, I don't know how far back bluegrass goes. I would say traditional Irish music probably came first.
Yeah.
I would think so.
I found that when we were in the States during the summer, because the support band, the guitar player, is a guy called Bennett Lewis. He's an amazing bluegrass player. So we kind of sat down, and he was just, I don't know many Irish trad tunes, but he knew plenty of bluegrass fiddle tunes.
Yeah.
So he was just showing me them. We'd sit there for ages playing them. Yeah, and the first one he showed me was a tune called Whiskey Before Breakfast. And he was like, this is without a doubt an Irish fiddle tune. And then he played, you know, it's 100% an Irish tune.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess maybe it probably did influence bluegrass that way. I need to get more into it because it's so fun to play because, you know, the tunes are quite simple. Just A and B section, and you can just play them around and around and around.
They're badass players, those guys, though, man. The tunes may be simple, but the playing is they're very, very skilled players. And there's a big resurgence of bluegrass now, even in places, believe it or not, like New York City.
Really?
Which there was, when I was a kid growing up there, man, there was no country music. And you might have had the off country station here and there, but, and there was definitely no bluegrass, but there's actually big communities now building around both of those, which is Western swing. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And the bluegrass players are the nicest guy. I mean, they're really sweet guys, man. Very nice.
Yeah. It seems super, like, really generous with their, with their knowledge. And yeah, so the thing, sorry, what I meant to say is, like, it's, they're simple tunes, but then depending on who's playing it, it just becomes the most amazing thing ever. Like, you ever hear Brian Sutton?
Yeah, I interviewed Brian. He's incredible.
You know, like, yeah, like, the way he plays is just outrageous.
He's a monster. Yeah, he's incredible. He's won the like International Bluegrass Guitarist of the Year for like 10 years 10 years in a row, man.
No one gets a look in.
No. And he's just a incredibly nice, humble, sweet guy, man. Very nice guy, man. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I'd love to see him play because he's amazing. Chris Eldridge is another one.
From Punch Brothers. Yeah, I interviewed Chris too. Great. You got him? Yeah, I interviewed Chris.
Who haven't you got? Yeah.
just a great guy. I mean, those guys are really cool to talk to. Grant Gordy's another really good guy out of New York City. He's in Brooklyn.
Nice.
Yeah, just very tough music to play, man. Mad respect for those guys.
It's all in the right hand, like, or the picking hand. You know, that stuff is...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing hearing someone who kind of does that all the time, and that's and how they, like, the volume they can get out of the right hand, but also
those are long songs.
It is, and the stamina to keep to keep going, and just the roundness of the whole thing. It's like, I feel like when I play an acoustic guitar, sometimes it sounds kind of, it doesn't sound as good as these guys. Like, you know, it sounds, it's this big, fat, kind of huge note coming out of it.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's amazing.
Hey, talk about, how about Lisa Lamb? She was with Celtic Woman. What was that gig like? How'd you get that gig?
Yeah, I met Lisa in January. And we just went out to the States to do some recording for an album. She got signed to a label over in the States. And we basically met at the gate, about to get on a flight together. So, like, her husband put us in touch, and we're like, right, he's going to LA for 10 days. We're like, oh, okay, cool. Met her 2 minutes before getting the flight and just hit it off. Like, so we went out, wrote a load of tunes, recorded them. And now we're doing an album in December.
Cool, man.
So yeah, so doing an album in,
back in LA or in
Ireland? Here in a Grouse Lodge. It's a studio in the kind of just the Midlands in Ireland. It's probably I think it's one of the biggest studios in the country. It's kind of one of the busy ones. It's not that many left, like, but so we're doing that out there, and that's going to be cool. Just a week away.
How big is Ireland? Like, if you go from top to bottom, how many hours would it take as a drive?
I'd say maybe five or six, maybe.
Okay. Are the roads, I've never been there, but I've been to the UK, you know, and there's, like, here, it's really cool. You got to admit, the transportation system, it's like, you want to go here from there, it's pretty much a straight line wherever you're going.
Yeah.
But in England, it's certainly not. It's like fucking maddening. What is it like in Ireland? Is it like hybrid, or is...
There's decent motorways all over the country. It depends how kind of rural you want to get.
Yeah.
But it's easy to get around.
That's cool. England, it's definitely not, man. It's really cumbersome, and it's just no straight lines. You got to go from A to B, and you got to go up to someplace else. It's just kind of
right. No, I think it can be fairly straightforward to get to the main kind of parts, but if you want to go out to the sticks, like in the middle of nowhere, you expect to go down some bumpy, narrow roads.
Do you guys drive? Is the wheel on the right, like in England?
The wheel is on the right,
Oh, yeah. So it's the same as in England. Drive that's to wild. The left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same as England.
Yeah. I tried doing it. It didn't work real good, man.
No.
No. My wife, you know, like I said, she grew up there. So she was able to do it. But I was like,
brain fart.
Oh, it's fucking got us killed. Roundabouts, you know, they don't have those here.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? I mean, like, what do I do here? And I didn't do any much though. I was useless on driving there, man.
I just remember that Simpsons episode where they go to they go to London and Homer pulls onto the roundabout. He's just there for like 24 hours going around and around.
Yeah. Well, it's safe. If you get off, then you freak out, man. At least you're around. Yeah. I was like, oh God, get me out of here.
Yeah.
Any cool stories from performing on some of the late night TV shows? How'd you like that?
Yeah, they were like, we were kind of like when I started playing with Niall last April 2017, we did 2 weeks of rehearsals and then came back to Dublin for a couple of weeks, and then we went straight off for the first kind of the start of the campaign out in LA, and like arrived in LA, and then the next day played on the Ellen show. So there was kind of a lot of that was just all surreal, that stuff. So I suppose the kind of the weird stories is literally just walking in to the building, coming from 2 weeks in Dublin doing nothing, and just going, holy shit, this is
I'm on national TV in America.
Yeah, about to play in this massive chat show. And yeah, for that whole month, like the month of May last year, we did like Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon. The cool thing about Jimmy Fallon was the Roots were the house band, or are the house band. So, I was never a massive Roots fan. I kind of like the individual players that play with like different acts.
Yeah.
Like I love Questlove's playing.
Oh, God,
he's D'Angelo.
Amazing. Yeah.
Like I love all that stuff, but I never really got into the Roots. But still, it was the coolest thing ever. Just they're kind of just there, they do a little rehearsal and they're sort of just wandered around, and then you go and play, and you get on the stage and they're literally all lined up sitting beside you, which is the scariest thing ever. Because they've been, you know, all that playoff music that they do is just burning. And then we go up to play a tune and it's like, oh shit, they're still there. I thought they would have left by now. But you ended up chatting to them afterwards, and I was chatting to guitar player Kirk, and he was just the nicest dude ever.
Yeah. I literally just got referred to him, man, so I'm looking forward to having him on the show.
Yeah, man, he was lovely, and you kind of forget, like, being around people like that, you sort of forget that they, like, at the end of the day, he's a guitar player who's interested in guitar, because he's like, oh, how did you get that weird filter sound that you were using, you know?
Yeah.
And you're just brought down. Everyone's on the same level, you know, for a minute, which is great.
Yeah. Guitar players are just great like that, man. Very, very cool. They're just really passionate about the instrument and about music. Yeah. That's what I've found, fortunately. How about, did you play with Toshi Unagi on Jimmy Kimmel's show?
Toshi Unagi? No.
He's their guitar player.
We did the thing where you play outside. They set up a separate stage.
Yeah. Okay.
Outdoors. Yeah. So we never even were in the studio. Gotcha. Didn't actually see his band.
Yeah.
Is he good?
Oh, Toshi's great guitar. Yeah, he plays at the Baked Potato twice a month.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
I recognize that name from the, from looking at the listings.
Yeah, he plays there.
I must
get
in, yeah.
Yeah, he plays there with his own band, the Buzz something, with Jorgen Carlson on bass from Government Mule. I forgot the drummer's name. And then he plays with a guy named Jamie Keim, another guitar player I had here on the show, and he plays there once or twice a month with him.
So, yeah,
he's a really good guy.
Well, I'll check him out next time I'm there.
You know, I should have asked you, how'd you get the gig with Niall?
And I got called from an MD that I knew in London, and was just asked to audition.
Was it a cattle call, a big audition?
Sorry?
Was it a cattle call? You know, cattle calls like, when you have like a bunch of people auditioning, they call it a cattle call.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah,
that's the expression. It was like that. Yeah, it was, you know, come in at 2 o'clock. You've got 2 o'clock till 2:15 before the next guy comes in. And yeah, so I think there was like five or six guitar players auditioning.
That's cool, man.
So yeah, so went in. I think I kind of fit the bill because it was the same age as Niall.
Yeah.
I think it was the only Irish guy that auditioned. He's Irish as well, so I think that definitely helps.
are we allowed to say that?
Well, you know.
No, I don't know.
Is that, like their own, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't have any problem. Yeah, you had something in common with you. I totally get it. You know, someone's going to be offended.
Absolutely.
Someone will be fucking offended about that, but oh well.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, I'm happy. I mean, listen, man, I'm not that this isn't like a politically correct show or anything, you know. This is a reality show. We're doing this.
You're talking to the wrong guy then.
Yeah, I mean, both of us.
Yeah. No, luckily that went well.
Did you think you did well? Did you think you did well at the audition?
Yeah, I think I did, yeah, because I'd learned the stuff really well. Like, it was to go in and play two tunes, one on acoustic guitar, one on electric guitar. I'd learned them quite well. Felt like, you know, because you did have 5 minutes to sort of have a chat with him. Not like he was sitting at a table, you know, interviewing you or anything. He's just kind of standing there playing with you. So you kind of have, you know, just have a bit of banter or whatever. I thought that went well, and then didn't hear about it for like 2 or 3 weeks. And sure, by then I was like, I screwed that up.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, starting having dreams about it going, you know, and all this stuff.
Totally get it, man.
Yeah. It's weird. It's a weird place to be in, waiting to, because I'd never done an audition before. Like, that's the first audition for anything I've done. And it was weird that kind of 2 week period. I kind of really started doubting myself. I was like, oh, why didn't I get it? Well, you know, what do the other people have that I didn't have or whatever?
Did they tell you when you left, hey, we'll give you a call in a week or 2 weeks or what? They didn't say anything.
I was told, yeah, to be in touch, and I was told that, like, it went well. It was all very like, wasn't a lot of info being given out. But
is that the kind of,
you know?
Sorry, go ahead. I apologize.
No, go on.
Is that the kind of thing? Can you say, like, on the way out, hey, what's your time frame for this? Like, you know, when would you be making? Is that, I don't know how that works. Is that?
Yeah, I suppose in future that's definitely what I do. But because that was like the first ever time I got a call for anything that I felt was going to be like, could be potentially quite big, and I kind of didn't really ask any questions because I was just delighted to be there. I
totally get it.
You know, I was just sort of in awe of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I was like that for a while, for months into it. But then 2 weeks later, got a call, and it was like, yeah, the audition went well, really good. Can you come over to London to go for a couple of pints with Niall, the last of the band? So
you had to fly over to, how far a flight is that?
It was like an hour flight.
That's a long way to go to get drunk, man.
So like, I had a couple of gigs that weekend, so I managed to like find some of the cover for me, which thankfully, and just got in the flight. And that, I think that was like the second audition. It was to see if, you know, if you were a lunatic or not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So everyone was quite reserved, and had a good time.
That's cool, man. That's right.
Yeah, and then the year, it's kind of been like 15 months, 16 months since that all kicked off, and it's been nuts. Like, it's been very surreal.
That's awesome. And now you're doing a record with him after the first of the year.
Say again?
You guys are doing a record now.
Well, he's doing one. He's doing one next year at some point, whenever. You know, it's written, he'll go in and do that. So I'd like to be part of that. It'd be great.
Cool. Niall, if you're listening, there's your man. Album, dude. There's your man, yeah. Jake Curran.
Yeah, man.
And he'll have another pint with you if you force him to.
Or 10, yeah.
where did you grow up in Ireland?
I grew up in Dublin.
Oh, so in the city?
Yeah, Dublin in the city. Yeah, just like out in the suburbs, place called Santry, 15 minutes from the city. Yeah. I'm here right now, you know.
You have any brothers and sisters? I mean, you said you had a sister, I think, right?
Yeah, I have a brother who's 16. My sister's 21.
So you're the oldest.
They're in college and school. Yeah, I'm the oldest, yeah.
Very cool. Did any of them play music?
No, they never really caught on to it. It was never really like forced on anyone. No, they never, my sister had a bass for like a year, but never really got into it. They just do their own thing, you know, they have their own interests. And
sure.
I think if you force music on people, it ends up not really going the right way.
Man, you can't force anything on anybody. It ends up going the wrong way. I tell you, that's been my experience anyways, as a parent.
It's not very enjoyable. And no.
My daughter was a cheerleader for a while, and here cheerleading is like a sport. Yeah. I don't know if they have that over there. You know, no. It's not like cheerleading for like a team. It's like an athletic sport, like doing flips and tumbles. And man, there were some women there that they made, it was so funny. They made their daughters do it. And I was like, you evil witch, she's going to fucking hate you at a certain point in time. You know, it's okay when she's 9, but you can't do this.
Yeah. It's kind of like living out your own dreams through your kid.
Absolutely.
Which is, it's a strange thought.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's also wrong. It's like, you know, don't make your problems their problems, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
What kind of work did your folks do?
And my dad works for Bridgestone, you know, a tire company.
Oh yeah, cool. They're out of there, aren't they? Aren't they headquartered in Ireland?
Is it the world headquarters? Maybe it's the European. Yeah, they've got a big setup here. Yeah, not too far from the house, like 20 minutes from here. So yeah, he does that, and my mom stopped working around when I was born, and she's kind of looked after.
That's cool.
The house and all that, and then my dad's obviously been like gigging along the way with different bands just around the country.
Sure. Childhood was pretty normal.
Yeah. Pretty normal. Yeah. 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 Pretty normal until I started playing the guitar, and then it was just full of guitar. just normal, you know, kicking the ball up the road, playing chasing, you know, just doing normal stuff.
Normal stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely nothing exceptional.
Did you know you wanted to play guitar for a living early on?
No, I don't think I realized that you could do that for a few years. Because I was obviously just, you know, like kind of most people play, you just kind of start playing and you enjoy it. And then a couple of years into guitar lessons, I don't know how this came up, but I think my teacher was like rushing off or something after a gig. He was running off, and I was like, "Oh, where are you going?" And he's like, "I'm going to a gig." And I was like, "Oh, right, okay." Then I asked him the following week, "What was your gig?" I found out that he was, you know, a session player, and he was running off to do, you know, he was running off to do like a musical theater thing, or he was going to play a wedding or something. I don't know, you know. So I think I was probably about 13 around then, and he kind of said that was what he did for a living. I was like, "Oh, wait, that's kind of cool."
Okay.
Huh. Yeah, and it was him who got me my first gig.
Oh, that's like great!
Not too long after that, his mother was a musical director for like different musical societies around Dublin, and she taught in a school nearby near the house, and she was, you know, musically directing their local their annual musical. So. Yeah, he got me and another student of his in to play guitar and that.
That's cool, man.
Which is, so like, I think me and the student, we were like 13 and 14 or something, like pretty young. And he was, the mad thing about the guitar player was he was a really busy drummer as well. So he was playing drums on the gig, and he got his two students to play guitar. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, that was kind of like the first gig I ever did. So it was sort of from there, I was like, right, that's the plan. let's do more of that.
So once you were out there, you really felt you enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, loved it. Yeah, definitely loved it. And then, you know, had like a band, you know, with lads in school, doing that thing. But was kind of like always interested in just playing as much different stuff as possible. Yeah,
it's very common. Most players that I've interviewed, they don't play one thing; they play everything. They really do. They like all kinds of music.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was just normal because of maybe the influence that teacher had on me. And then when he kind of got to a point where he wanted to like pass me on to another teacher to do some more advanced stuff, kind of that teacher was sort of in the same boat. You know, he was playing a load of different things around town. I owe a lot to
two teachers.
The two of those guys. Yeah, yeah. Because showed me a lot of stuff and got me a lot, made me a lot of contacts.
Is Dublin the capital of Ireland?
Yeah.
It is. Okay.
It is the capital,
How many people live there in Dublin?
Between like 1 million and 1.5 million.
Okay. So it's probably like a little smaller than Tampa. Interesting.
Right. Okay. What's Tampa? 2 million?
I think, but it's like three cities, Tampa, St. Pete, and Clearwater. There's like the whole Tampa Bay. It's probably about 1.5 million, but all three of them.
Right.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And New York's like fucking 8 million people.
8 million.
And it's probably half. It's
two million in Manhattan alone or something.
It's massive, man.
Yeah. It's crazy. How about L.A. is like, what, 20 million or something?
Yeah, but L.A. is really spread out.
It's really
spread out, you know. It's very big, you know, whereas like New York is really concentrated. I mean, it's high, very dense. You know, that's why, you know, you mentioned that they build up. They have to. You can't accommodate the people.
There's no room.
You have to build up, man. Same thing with office space. Is there anything you're looking forward to doing a little more of over the next few years? Like, what's your game plan or what are some things you'd like to do?
It's kind of the same thing. I just like to keep playing as much a variety of music as possible. Also would like to write more music and sort of kind of get my own kind of playing style in my own music, you know, rather than just kind of sort of imposing it on other people's music. Just sort of, you know, find a thing. So I've just been writing a lot since I've got home. And I kind of plan to try and keep that buzz going because I'm kind of on it. I'm enjoying that at the moment and I'm getting up and I'm sort of doing it every day, all day.
Good.
And it's nice. And I don't know, with me, those kind of things happen for like 3 weeks and then they sort of disappear for like a month or two. So I'm kind of just like...
Yeah, but you might be able to write 10 songs in 3 weeks. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, and it's, I would like, at the moment, I'd like to do more of that, but then in 3 weeks, my head will go somewhere else and I'll just want to like practice or, you know, might want to just not play, you know,
sure,
you know, for a week. So it's, yeah, but, yeah, no, definitely do that. I'd like to like, just, yeah, play more, record more. I don't know, just, yeah, keep pushing the boat out and enjoying it.
As far as gear, like what's your primary guitar? Like what's your go-to guitar now? Not for session work. I mean, the guitar you like playing the most.
The guitar I'm loving playing the most at the moment is, I picked up this like mid-60s Harmony, Bobcat guitar.
Love those guitars, man. Oh
yeah.
With the D'Armond so cool. Gold foil pickups.
Yeah, man. Oh. $400 in a little vintage shop in, where was it? Tacoma, Washington.
That was a great.
Yeah, because I'd been looking for like a K or a silver tone or something for a while and then walked in, saw that. I was like, right, give me a go of that. That just sounds amazing.
Yeah. Is that one pickup or two?
It's got the two pickups.
That's great, man.
And it's got a really noisy switch. And if you turn around towards the amp, it starts squealing. And, you know, it buzzes and it's got all these, you know, kind of flaws that are, I don't know, obviously they're a bit annoying, but the tone sounds great. And the pickups are, because they're so high output, they're really like giving the amp a kick up the ass.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, you know, you pick it up and you play differently to how you've played, you know, how I was playing all summer.
That's great.
Which is great. And it makes the amp sound, I just can't believe that I paid $400.
That's if they're not in good condition, that's what they cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're not in good condition, that's not that it's in bad condition, but you know, when they're really cleaned up, they're like $1,000. But you know, if they're in average condition, you know, and they haven't, and they're still making the noise with the switch and stuff. Yeah. They're about $400. They shouldn't pay more than that.
Have you got one yourself?
No, but that's like the next one I want to buy. I want to buy a Harmony Silvertone. Same, you know, very similar thing. I think the Bobcat, is that the one, the burst looks like a jazz master?
It looks like a kind of melted mini jazz master.
Yeah. I want to get
it's great.
Those are great. I think the silver tone looks more like a Les Paul maybe.
Yeah. It's sort of got like a little, maybe a Dan Electro thing going on. So the silver tones have that.
Yeah. But it's got the same thing with the gold, you know, the arm. Sometimes they have three pickups.
Okay.
Sometimes, I've seen those.
It's the story of those guitars that they were like catalog guitars for Sears.
Yes, that's correct. And there's a bunch of brands like K. They're all the same manufacturer. They're all the Harmony.
That's
cool, man.
I imagine there's a lot of them out there that are pretty disappointing instruments and you know, not looked after, and they're sort of hard to play. And because I did try a couple that were pretty rough, but there's some gems.
Well, if you got a good luthier too, they can do a lot of work on those.
Yeah,
to fix them up. Yeah, I met a guy in Nashville. I actually had interviewed him, and he's like, do you know, you ever hear that show MacGyver? They have that over there.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, he's the guy like, who like makes makeshift.
Yeah.
Things, right?
Yeah, yeah, like yeah. He could float a hot air balloon away with a thimble or something like that.
Yeah.
So this guy is like that with guitars, and he fixed up this 335. He's just a brilliant dude. So if I'm going to get one, I'm just going to have it shipped to Nashville and have his name is John Prestia. Shout out to John Prestia. So you got the Bobcat. What would be your second round out your top three?
Bobcat is cool. What else? I've got this like Bill Nash telly.
Yeah.
From I think it's like from 2011. It was originally an Esquire, and I ended up just putting a neck pickup in it. I put about 3-4 sets of pickups in it before I found something that I liked.
Very cool.
I only recently just got something that I liked in it, and yeah, that's been great.
Did you get that in the States also?
Sounds like a telly. Yeah, I got that last year in San Jose.
Okay.
In a place, can't remember what it was called, Guitar Workshop or something like that. It's kind of like a shell pink thing, a bit battered, bashed up,
yeah,
in inverted commas.
Yeah.
It's that's cool. And then after that, I don't know.
What did you play on the Nile gig?
I played that a lot.
The telly.
Towards the end, I would just be using that for the whole gig. Mm. Played it like a black Japanese telly.
Yeah.
With a 62 reissue with the white binding. Played a Les Paul Jr.
Oh, wow.
The Les Paul Jr. probably would be third, because I ended up tuning that down a whole step and putting a heavier set of strings on it, just because we were playing a tune in D and it just made sense to just tune it down. Hmm. And that was like, that sounds really, really ballsy.
What year is that? Is that an older one or?
No, it's 2012 or 2013 or something.
Yeah. I love the juniors.
Yeah, it's great. One pickup.
Yeah.
Yeah, just rock and roll.
Leslie West, one of my favorite guitar players, you know, he played that, so he sounded so great on that, man.
Yeah.
This is a tough question. Who's your favorite guitar player, man?
It's Def. It's like for a while there was a couple of guys like Brad Paisley was always up there. Anto Drennan was always up there.
For you guys listening, Anto Drennan is just freaking amazing guitar player in Ireland. I interviewed him. Well worth your time to listen to that episode. He's not only a great player, he's a great guy, and he's got more stories than anybody. So Anto, A-N-T-O, Drennan, D-R-E-N-N-A-N.
Yeah, Anto, because it was cool. It was, you could just go watch Anto in town, you know. You hop on the bus and just watch him play.
Are you in that Guitar Ireland group?
Yeah.
Mikhail put me in there, right? And so a couple of guys have reached out, and they're like, hey, man, because I'm gonna come to Ireland just to see Anto. Because Anne lives in England, and she's from England. So next time she goes to see,
you can do it.
Yeah, you know, I usually don't
trip.
Yeah. I usually don't go with her, but I will, because I want to come see Anto in Ireland, and she's never been to Ireland actually. So I figure we'll go there. It's beautiful. It looks gorgeous, you know. So
yeah,
we could spend some time there, and I'm like, shit, I want to go see this guy play. And it's because so someone on the group reached out to me and said, hey man, you know. And I wish I knew who it was, Connor or Colm or some.
Yeah.
It was Dennis. Yeah. He said, hey, I own a club here, and, you know, come out with your wife, and, you know, Anto plays sometimes, and I'd love to host you and some drinks and a meet. It's so different.
Hey, take him up on that.
Oh, I said that. I said, man, I will take you up on that when I'm there. But it's so different when you deal with people from from smaller towns, especially in other countries, because they're much more like, like it's their family, like his place, you know, it's like his very, house, you know, it's like he invited me over to his for dinner.
Yeah, you know? Super friendly and accommodating.
Yeah.
Those small little, but yeah, rural towns.
Yeah.
If that's where it was. Yeah. Yeah.
It was probably, I think he said it was not far outside of Dublin, but it's just small for me comparatively, you know,
dealing
with bigger cities here. And, you know, even here in Tampa is a nicer, it's a smaller town feel than growing up in New York City, for example, you know. And I think the smaller the place you get, the more inviting and warm people are, because they can be. There's not as much of a hustle going on where they got to worry about shit, you know. But it was a really sweet guy. I apologize that I don't know his name, but anyway.
You should take him up, come over.
I will.
Go catch him play, yeah.
I will. I want to come see Anto play, hang out with all you guys now. So Brad Paisley, Anto, who else?
Yeah, Anto's up there. Michael Landau is, to be honest, is probably overall everyone. Because he's kind of sort of same as Anto, you know, he's done this, he's been a sideman. A load of people he's played on just hundreds of albums, and he's played with like just some crazy, like, you know, loads of Joni Mitchell stuff, sort of more like kind of 80s tastic Joni Mitchell, but still cool. I just something about his playing that I love. Find it very like understated, subtle, but then, you know, let's rip when the moment's right. But apart from that, trying to check out as many new guys as possible. And for that, you end up kind of finding a lot of guys come from New York. So like a lot of new jazz guys, like Julian Lage.
Yeah.
I think he's New York. Near Felder.
Yeah, I had Near on the show. He's great. Yeah.
Near, he blows my mind.
Yeah, he's a really good player.
Yeah, really good player. Great, like, knowledge of just like constructing like unorthodox sounding lines and chords and all that. So
he's a bright guy in general. He's a pretty smart person in general. Yeah,
yeah. I met him once before. He's a lovely dude.
Very much.
Really, 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 really nice guy, and happy to talk.
Very much.
Shop. Who else is good? Yeah, I don't know. I'd say Mike Landau will take the biscuit as number one. There's a million guys that, you know, there'll always be someone else, you know.
Are there any players that you've like jammed with, that you've enjoyed, had a good time with?
Like guitar players?
Yeah, I don't know if you bump into them much to play with.
Well, I really enjoyed playing with that guy I mentioned earlier, Bennett Lewis. Who plays with Maren Morris, who was supporting us during the summer. Mad into his bluegrass stuff. Amazing at all that. But a really, really tasteful electric guitar player. Really full kind of warm sound. And yeah, he's another kind of Julian Lage nut. He's into all that stuff and sort of has a picking style similar to him. So yeah, and I really enjoyed playing with him. I kind of enjoy playing with, you know, drummers and bass players more than other guitar players.
Sure.
Don't know. Kind of hitting a blank here.
No, it's cool, man. It's cool. Desert Island Discs.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Top three, just for today, man. Knowing it could change.
Today, okay, it would probably like not just today for life. It would be one of the Michael Jackson albums, either Off the Wall or Thriller, let's say Off the Wall for today.
Okay.
The other would be from a band called Jellyfish.
Sure.
Their album, their Belly Button album. Or maybe the other one, I don't know. No, let's say Belly Button by Jellyfish. And then a third one, I don't know. I've been checking out Donny McCaslin's new album, sax player from New York, and I haven't finished listening to it yet. So just because I need to finish listening to it, I'm going to a desert island tomorrow.
That was pretty quick answers, man.
Yeah, The first two are obvious. Like that they'll always stick out.
What do you like about the Michael Jackson album?
Just how it's produced and how every little part interacts with each other, and I just think Quincy Jones's production on that was just mind blowing, and it was just played really well by the guys who played it. Guitar parts are cool as fuck, like David Williams, Steve Lukather.
It was Lukather, I was gonna say, yeah. Williams is dead, I think. He's passed. So, yeah, about like quite a while ago, like 2009 or 10, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. Someone mentioned him to me yesterday as one of their favorite players. Let me see who does. Toshi Inagi.
Right.
I interviewed Toshi yesterday. He was telling me that was one of his favorite players is David Williams.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Great guy to get into for that style of
rhythm.
You know, kind of rhythm and it's sort of like the funk kind of funk music, but also funk brought into pop and you know that single note kind of picking thing.
Man, I got a guy you could check out who does that really well. A guy named Jimmy James from Delvon.
Jimmy James.
Yeah. It's a stage name, but it's from the Delvon Lamar Organ Trio. He plays in two bands, Delvon Lamar Organ Trio and man, I'm having a brain fart, but I interviewed him. He is one of the funkiest cats. He's an amazingly great funk guitar player.
Is he from Chicago?
Seattle.
Seattle. Is he a kind of big guy with an afro?
Yep, and he plays a harmony.
I've seen this guy.
A silver tone, I think. Oh.
Yeah. I've seen him with that organ trio. Yeah, and just on YouTube, but he's killer.
He's great.
Great groove.
And his knowledge of funk, like he turned me on to so much shit. Like after the call, I went and listened. It was great, man. He's really smart guy.
Yeah, I'll check that one out.
Yeah, and he had a good story. He had a really, really, really difficult childhood, and he's done great, man. Very good guy.
Yeah. Nice. I'll give that a look.
Jimmy James. Yeah. And then another great funk guys is Wolfpack. I'm sure you know them. Corey Wong.
Yeah. They were playing here a couple of days ago. Yeah. Corey Wong.
He's great.
He's got a freaky looking right hand.
We talked about that. I said, man, your hand is like Gumby. What the hell? And he goes, you know, it's just my thing, man. But he's played that kind of music for his whole life. You know, that's his specialty his whole life, you know.
He's great, man.
Mark Lethierry, all the guys of Snarky Puppy are great as well. Same, very funky, you know.
In that kind of world, Mark Lethierry's groove is just so solid.
Very much.
Who else is kind of cool at that thing? Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah, for sure.
Paul Jackson Jr.
Yeah,
those dudes. Yeah, I always kind of love like that Michael Jackson stuff. Like Steve Lukather is playing.
Yeah,
in that kind of style was like I'm not the biggest Steve Lukather fan in the world, but like that side of his playing is really really incredible.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Tell me something about yourself that people would be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
Oh God, man, I don't know.
This is a very American question, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of Americans would have like already have an answer prepared to that.
Because we got a lot of odd shit.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm 1/8 Irish. God knows. I don't like.
Is that a thing in Ireland? Like, does everybody know? Like, okay, I'm going to go to America, and everybody's going to tell me how Irish they are. Really?
Everyone
That's
knows.
So fun. Yeah. I didn't know that. That is hilarious, man.
Yeah,
that's quite funny.
It's hilarious. Yeah, it's everyone knows that.
Do they like your accent? Is that another thing?
That. Say again.
Your accent. Do people like go nuts over the accent?
Yeah, I think they like it, definitely in certain parts. Mm. They definitely like the British accent, or.
Oh my God. My wife told me
more of a novelty. Like,
this is really funny. I went to, she's from a little town in England. And I remember this is like 20 years ago. I was over there visiting, helping her mom with something. And I think she needed like an extension cord, something at a hardware parts. So I said, I'll go get it. Cause I was dying to get out of the house, you know? And, I go into this store and this is the middle of fucking nowhere. I mean, it's the sticks. I mean, to me, it probably wasn't, but it's, you know, tiny little town. And I'm talking to this girl, I was probably, you know, 35, and this girl was probably 18. And this girl's just looking at me, and I said, "Hey, are you okay?" And she said, "I love your accent." I said, "You know, it's the first and last time I'm ever going to hear that." I said,
"Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much." I mean, you know, it's in Dunstable. But you know what's really funny? Anto grew up like two blocks in that same town from where my wife lived until he was 8.
Oh, no way.
How weird is that? Until he was, and he's like 2 years older than her. Otherwise, they would have gone to like primary school.
They probably would have been buddies.
Yeah, in school. How weird is that? Like, of all the places to grow up.
That is mental.
Yeah. I was
small,
like.
Small world, man.
House, isn't it, man? I mean, I was like, what? You know? And then I interviewed this other guy, and he's like, I'm interviewing, you know, Matt Pryor? He's a UK guitar player.
I know the name, yeah.
And he goes, oh, yeah, I just live 10 minutes outside of Dunstable. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Suddenly, Dunstable is the fucking mecca of, like, everything in my
guitar
life.
Players.
Yeah, it's really
you're
weird.
Like, you're like, that is gas.
Yeah, it was weird. All right, so nothing about you is odd. We'll have to.
I don't know. I don't really like copper coins. I find them a bit weird, and I don't like touching them, or they just freak me out a bit.
Do you have copper coins over there?
Yeah, unfortunately.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's odd.
I don't know. I'm sure people have more odd things to say about me than I have to say about myself.
Yeah, I'm sure. I was going to say, well, also give it some time. Another 10 years, we'll come back on the show.
Yeah,
you'll have a ton of odd shit. Trust me. Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music, Jake?
To be honest, I don't really. No, kind of. On towards the end of that tour, we all the guys in the band. And a couple of other people ended up getting into the gym, but like we did it for like 2 months. I was quite into it and was going to join a gym when I got home, but I still haven't done that yet. So,
I hear you.
I don't even watch that much TV.
I don't either.
Sports went out the window when I started playing the guitar.
Yeah, that's usual.
I'll find something like I'll take up darts or something. I don't know.
There you go.
Pool. Any kind of pub sport, you know.
Excuse to get down there, right?
Yeah.
What's a favorite place you've traveled? Because you've been all over now.
It's probably been Japan.
Man, you know how many people tell me that? Everybody loves Japan.
Have you been?
I have not, but I have this guy, a buddy of mine there, and he's always like, man, you got to come out. He runs this marketing thing, and that's what my normal business is. I've run a marketing company for 20 years, and he's like, come to the event, you'll speak, and blah, blah, blah. And I just haven't made it out there yet. I'd love to go. What do you like about it?
It's probably just the wackiness of it all and how different it is. Well, you know, it's not wacky to them, obviously, people up there, but it's just so... It's just so far removed from Western culture and
Give me an example.
I always tell people about this, but it's hard. I think definitely one of the things, and this is probably sounds a bit stupid, but one of the things that gets me is just seeing the alphabet, like they're writing everywhere. You know, that's sort of like a bit of a culture shock and. Man, I don't know. It's just so bright and colorful, and people dress quite differently. Shops sell the craziest things ever.
Yeah,
like I seen like a water powered speaker. You just like you pour water into this thing, and it powers the speaker. Like it's like I don't know. Stuff, I can't really put my finger on it. It's just so mental.
Yeah.
The
food. I heard the food is really different there too.
The food is if you're into sushi and that kind of thing, food can be great. But it's also can be pretty mental. It's mainly just how colorful it is, and you know you go out for a couple hours during the day, and you know you might come home the evening and you're pretty wrecked from just taking in. It's just sensory overload.
Is it more so than New York even?
I think so. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, Tokyo is pretty hectic. Like, it's 35 million people living in Tokyo.
Holy shit.
So it's
that is mental.
It's full on, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no, Tokyo. I've only been to Tokyo. I haven't been to Kyoto, which is meant to be more like traditional Japan, whereas Tokyo is quite, you know, modern and, yeah, and very high rise built up. But Tokyo or Kyoto is meant to be beautiful.
Very cool. Oh,
best guitar shops I've ever been in my life have been in Tokyo.
What? Why? Most biggest selection, best prices. What?
I think biggest selection.
That's why.
Yeah, there's this area called, I think it's called Okinomitsu, and there's like 50 shops just on one block.
Are there a lot of shops in Dublin?
There's like four or five.
That's quite a bit.
Two vintage shops, and then, you know, three or four kind of shops that stock,
yeah,
you know, standard stuff. But
I,
yeah,
don't,
no,
I don't think there's that many guitar shops service in New York.
There's not that many in New York.
No, there's not.
Yeah,
not anymore. What,
like, there's like two guitar centers.
Right.
30th Street Guitars.
30th Street Guitars moved. They're like someplace else they're, now. But
they're,
yeah,
they're on 27 now. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not a big selection there. And Rudy's is there.
Rudy's is expensive.
Real expensive. And same thing with, and I was downtown on like lower, not Lower East Side. Shit. There's another pretty well-known shop when I was there last time. And I just like,
Rivington Guitars?
Yeah, Rivington. I was just going to, I thought it was Rivington. Yeah. It was like not much of a selection. I mean, you could fart and you're through the place. It's tiny and there's not a lot of, they had a lot of pedals, hundreds of pedals, but like, you know, and prices there are just so crazy. You know, just over, everything's overstated there.
I found that as well. Yeah. In New York, yeah, it's hard to find a good deal.
No, there's
The best deals are just found in these off the beaten track kind of towns. You know
what you did in buying that Harmony in, where'd you say it was, in somewhere in
Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah, that's the move, man. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of would love to go back for a couple months just to pick up more like little things like that.
Yeah,
because you know they're not pricey. And they bring out something different when you're playing.
Yeah,
and they must have made like thousands of those guitars because they're so easy to find.
Yeah,
like after I bought that Bobcat, I found four more of them. You know, and I was only in about four guitar shops after that. I bought that one. You know, and they just every shop had them.
That's cool. From what I understand, unless you really know what you're doing, you got to stay away from a pawn shops, though. Like, you're okay.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I've been told, like, you know, because they're not, like, the most honest guys in there. But I don't know a lot about, like, that end of guitars. You know, I couldn't look at it and say, oh, I could tell the neck was redone or, you know, this busted the headstock. You know, but if you're smart on that stuff, like, a lot of the guys I have on the show are brilliant. Like, man, they really know what they're doing, so they can. But you got to do what you did, like, find these smaller shops in these off-track towns. And not that Tacoma is a small city, but it's not.
Yeah, it's not like a metropolis.
Yeah, so. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a couple of places along the way that, yeah, deadly, love it.
Man, two more questions. Most embarrassing or funniest thing that's happened to you on stage or in the studio?
I don't know, man. I'm actually quite lucky so far.
Nothing major.
nothing major, other than maybe like, not listening to the full song when you're learning at home and not realizing there's a middle eight and making an absolute dog's dinner of it. But like not that happens all the time for anyone out there looking to employ
me. Looking to hire Jake. Yeah. This is don't expect that. I mean, this is the one off. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, not really, to be honest, thankfully. But I would like something like that to happen, you know, just to have
the stories
back and a laugh, you know. Yeah, yeah, just because, you know, stuff like that is funny. And if you take it too personally, or you take it to heart too much, it's
can't take anything too personally, man. Trust me.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
Last question: what's the best advice you've ever been given, if you remember, and who gave it to you?
To be honest, probably back to that guitar teacher to play, to keep your mind open and play as many styles of music as you can, and don't dismiss anything. And then and I don't know if he told me it, but it's kind of just, it's sort of just common advice that floats around. It's just like, say yes to everything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you pass up something if you pass a bit, like a gig or an opportunity, that could potentially have brought you like 10 other opportunities or 10 other contacts. And then, you know, so it's just say yes to everything, even if you're kind of strapped for time and you can't, it might be difficult to get from one place to the other in time. Sort of say yes and figure it out later.
That's right. Even when someone says, come to London for a pint.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be there. Yeah.
Hey man, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. And hopefully next time you come here, I'll get to see you, or maybe I'll be there first. Who the hell knows? Let me tell everybody where to find Jake. Website, Jake Curran Music. It's J-A-K-E Curran, C-U-R-R-A-N music.com. And he's on Instagram, Jake Curran Guitar. And you can find him on tour with Niall Horan, N-I-A-L-L from One Direction. And he did a couple of tracks with a producer called Embers, E-M-B-R-Z. He's on the songs called Home and Heartlines. And he did some work with CeCe Brez. Do you know the name of the tracks you're on there?
What's the name of the track? When It Falls.
When it was the last one.
When it falls, yeah. I think we're doing some new stuff soon.
Very cool.
Man, yeah. Thanks for having me, Craig.
Dude, man, thanks for coming on. I would like to meet you in person one day. It'll be cool.
Have a pint in London. Give us a shout when you're here. Yeah.
No, I will for sure, man. Are you kidding me? I only know 4 people in the whole freaking country. Believe me, I'll call all of you. That won't be hard.
Dude, yeah.
Hey, man.
Absolutely.
Thanks. And I'm really looking forward to seeing where your career goes. And we'll have you back on the show once you come out with your album, or, you know, in a few more years when you're a Jake Curran 2.0 or 3.0, man.
Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Thank you, brother.
Really appreciate that.
Likewise. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, share it with a friend on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks again to Jake Curran for spending time with us. I definitely appreciate it, and support him on the road and in his career. And make sure you go to the homepage of everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list. Get advance notice of guests coming on the show and the opportunity to send in your questions. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.